followers of Jenny Lawson's wildly popular blog, The Blogess, or her column in the Houston Chronicle, know she has a distinctive voice. She chats about her 5-foot-tall metal chicken Beyonce, her tweets with Star Trek star Will Wheaton. She posts pictures of her collection of ethically taxidermied animals. One, a tiny white mouse dressed like Hamlet, adorns the cover of her new memoir, which tells her story.
When I tell people that my father is kind of a total lunatic, they laugh and nod knowingly. They assure me that theirs is too, and that he's just a typical father. And they're right. If the typical father runs a full-time taxidermy business out of the house and shows up at the local bar with a miniature donkey and a Teddy Roosevelt impersonator and thinks other people are weird for making such a big deal out of it. If the typical father says things like, "Happy birthday, here's a bathtub of raccoons," or "We'll have to take your car, mine has too much blood in it," then yeah, he's totally normal. Still, I don't remember any of the kids from Charles in Charge feeling around the deep freeze for the popsicles and instead pulling out an enormous frozen rattlesnake that Charles had thrown in while it was still alive. Maybe I missed that episode. We didn't watch a lot of TV.
Blogger Jenny Lawson reading from her new book, Let's Pretend This Never Happened, a mostly true memoir. You can hear why she gets 2 to 3 million hits a month at her blog. But Jenny Lawson also taps into something else. She can bring you to tears talking about her depression or her miscarriages, the kind where she had to carry a dead fetus for a month and have a nervous breakdown. All this before having a beautiful little girl with her husband, Victor. We want to spend a few minutes today with blogger Jenny Lawson. She joins us from Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Jenny, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I have to ask, how are you doing? Because one of the things you talk about is you are a very shy person, curling up in a ball at times with such anxiety, and it's diagnosed anxiety disorder, that you can't, you know, that you blurt out completely inappropriate things at dinner parties or can't
exactly
function at all, you know, so this must be hard.
This is really difficult. I am very lucky in that, first of all, I've had a lot of behavioral therapy, which kicks in. Secondly, I have a lot of drugs, which also kick in. When I first started touring and I would have to do interviews and do readings, my therapist said, well, you know, we can put you on this special drug while you're on tour. And a lot of like rock stars use it when they go out on stage. It's a performance drug. And I was like, you're going to give me cocaine? And she was like, no, it's an anxiety drug. What is wrong with you? Why would you even go there? And I'm like, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's exactly why I need the drugs.
Because you blurt things out. Well, you know, one of the chapters in your book is the first time you sort of got together with kind of a girl's slumber party with other female bloggers. And you say, well, this is actually what a lot of us have in common.
Absolutely. I was terrified the entire time and felt really uncomfortable and just kept basically proving to myself that I don't get along well with women. And it was about halfway through that I realized that every woman that was there was having the exact same conversation in their head. And I realized that I was bringing all of this emotional baggage that I had been carrying since grade school, when you first start to feel like, I don't fit in, I'm all alone, no one's going to ever get me.
And yet you met these other women who maybe had some of the same feelings. And is that why blogging worked for you and them?
I think so. You know, when I first started writing about the fact that I have depression and anxiety disorder, it was difficult to be that kind of honest about it, but I really felt like I didn't have another choice. For me, it has always, I've always felt like it's very obvious to everyone around me that I am anxious and nervous and just about to hide under the table, which I probably will do at some point during this interview. And what was interesting is when I first started writing about it, how many people came out of the woodwork to not only support me and say, you know, me too, you're not alone, but also how many people came out and said, my sister has anxiety disorder or my father has it, and I never understood it until I heard you explain it in that way, and now maybe I understand it a little better. What's really been a surprise, though, is that in the past, I would say year or so, I've become very open about it, and whenever I'm having a depression period or if I'm going through a period where I just cannot write, I'm very honest about it on the blog, and people are very supportive. And I've gotten a ton of emails from people saying that they read not just the post, but they read the comments on the post and the comments on the post of thousands of people saying, "Me too, you're not alone," told them that they weren't alone, and made them decide not to kill themselves. And I've gotten so many emails like that of people who were saved because of the support of strangers.
Well, and this becomes even more worth noting because, you know, before we know this about you in reading the book, if you haven't, you know, read the blogs, it's just so funny, this life you talk about. You know, oh, yeah, when I was playing hide-and-seek with my sister once, I kind of tripped and fell into the carcass of a dead deer. Or, yeah, we had neighbors who used to invite us over to swim in their pool, which was actually an open-air cistern that was used to clean pigs. You know, it's just funny stuff. I'm wondering, did you start using that stuff to mask, you know, how you were really feeling? Or did you see the humor in that stuff maybe because of how you were feeling? I don't know.
For me, humor is therapy. And so if I come up against something, whether it be infertility or anxiety disorder or depression, if I can find a way to laugh at it, there's something about laughing at something that's this enormous demon that makes it so much less of a monster. And for me, that's sort of been my whole role, is chronicling my life in a way that I can find the laughter in everything, even in things that you wouldn't necessarily find laughter in.
Yeah. Let's talk about the miscarriages, because I'm thinking when you tell us in your chapter in the new book about the miscarriages, it comes as such a shock, you know, and you say it's going to be really, really sad for a little while, but then it ends up okay.
Yes.
It was really, really, really sad.
It was, and I think that was why it was important for me to write about it, because for me, things aren't really over unless I have the ability to put it in a chapter and shut the door on it. So writing about losing children was extremely difficult. Writing about having an anxiety attack actually put me into anxiety attacks. When I wrote the anxiety chapter, for example, I had about 4 anxiety attacks just writing that one page explaining what it feels like. And it's interesting, my grandmother always used to, whenever she would talk about cancer, she would whisper it. She would be like, and then so-and-so has cancer, because mm-hmm. she felt like if you said it out loud, it was like you were calling it down on you. And I see where that comes from, because so often when I write about depression or anxiety, it does feel like I'm kind of bringing it onto me. But at the same time, it feels like every single time I get a little bit stronger and the pieces that are broken heal in a stronger way that aren't going to break again.
The bloggess Jenny Lawson, her book is Let's Pretend This Never Happened, tells the story of her often bizarre upbringing in rural Texas, very funny, but also of her health struggles, depression, miscarriages, after which she was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress, became suicidal, tough. Then she and husband Victor had little Haley. She writes about that birth in great detail as well. But Jenny, the tough stuff, you know, not just the depression, the anxiety, the issue that you had during pregnancy that meant you had to give yourself shots all the time, but also you had some form of arthritis. It sounds horrible.
It's no fun. It's polyrheumatoid arthritis, which means that it's in a different joint every day, which basically means I go to sleep not knowing what part of me is going to wake up stabbed by Freddy Krueger. Although I have to say, very luckily, I think we've found the perfect combination of drugs. So I actually have not been in a wheelchair in the last 6 months. So, woohoo!
Well, and those are very serious, and they sound very, you know, very painful. But do you ever find yourself wondering, especially as you look at the aggregate here in the memoir, why do these things happen to me? Why do they happen to me?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm the new Job. Who knew?
Not just the illnesses, but of course, your father's live turkeys follow you to school one day and completely humiliate you. Or you're the one girl in the farming class who, with your arm up the cow to mm-hmm. inseminate it, loses the syringe.
It always happens to me. You know, what's interesting is, well, two things. One is, I think these things happen to everyone. It's just that we block them out.
But you have more than most.
I think I probably do. But I think at the same time, you know, you're not given more than you can handle. And when it comes right down to it, all of the things that are in this book. And, you know, the reason why I called it Let's Pretend This Never Happened is because I wanted to pretend that this stuff had never happened, because they were all the most, you know, mortifying moments of my life. But then when it came right down to it, those were the moments that I remembered in my life. And those were the moments that made me who I am today.
And in fact, you and Victor move little Haley back to rural Texas. Why? What was the pull? What did you want for Haley?
Well, you know, when Haley was first born, I wanted her to have everything that I never had. So I was like, she's going to have ballet lessons and piano. She's going to be the most normal kid ever. And I realized about a year or two into that I really didn't want that for her, both because normal's pretty boring and also because she's not going to fit into our family if she's normal. So I started thinking about my childhood and all the things in my childhood, and I thought, she's not getting any of these bizarre moments that I had growing up, and she's not going to get them unless we go back to the country. And so that's what we decided to do. And we found all of our own brand new weird moments that put the strange and the wondrous together.
Just give us a couple.
Let's see. One of my favorites is, there's a guy that lives down the street from us, and he gives away hairless rats and flying squirrels. And so you see these notes that he's plastered everywhere, where he's written, handwritten, you know, free flying squirrels. And then a week later, you'll see another note that'll just say free squirrels, and the flying is all scratched out. And you're like, how many squirrels died before he realized these squirrels can't fly?
But I love on the note, because you put photograph, because you know people won't believe these things, you have photographs of everything.
Oh, and yeah.
I love
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, for the kids.
For the kid, yeah, free for kids. Delivery 24 hours. I'm like, who needs 24 hours delivery for flying squirrels? What kind of an emergency is that?
Well, speaking of squirrels flying and otherwise, what is your fascination with taxidermied little things, like the mouse with the red cape a la Hamlet, with the skull on his little tiny hand? He's striking a pose. It's a real mouse that somebody has taxidermied that way. Is it just some edible, you know, some because your father was a taxidermist? What is your attraction?
I think part of it is that, you know, my father was a taxidermist, still is a taxidermist. And so I think there's a little part of me that is, you know, a little bit of a daddy's girl. But, you know, growing up, I never liked any of the taxidermy. And it wasn't until I found this, you know, little mouse who was wearing a cape and this little Hamlet von Schnitzel. And then I realized that was my calling, is to find ethically taxidermied, so they had to have died of natural causes, taxidermied animals wearing clothing.
Well, fortunately, that's not the only thing you do with clothing. The red dress, what is it?
Years ago, I had written this post about how I had always wanted a red silk ball gown, but I knew that I would never go any place that I would ever wear it. And it was just one of those things that, you know, you always think in the back of your mind of that one thing that you really want, but you know you're never going to get. And then I thought, you know what? Why not? So I found a friend who made this giant red ball gown for me. And I found another friend who agreed to come with me out to a cemetery. And I changed into this ball gown because I couldn't even fit it into my car. So I'm like naked in a cemetery, putting on this red ball gown. And she took these amazing pictures of me. And I shared it in a post and talked about how everyone should go out and find their red dress, whether it's taking flying lessons or, you know, walking on the trapeze or whatever that one weird thing is that you think, oh, I don't really need this, but you're worth it. So I wrote about it, and I had someone reply and say, I'm going to a blogging conference that you're going to. I haven't left the house in a long time. I'm really agoraphobic. And going to this blogging conference will be the finish line of this therapy that I've gone to. And so I said, well, you know what? I'll bring the red dress and you can wear it when you get there. So I brought the red dress and met her, and she was lovely. And I took these pictures of her, and she was crying wearing the red dress. And I posted them, and then someone else said, you know, I'd like to wear the red dress because I'm, you know, going through this sex change, and, you know, that's my red dress. And so we did those pictures. But what happened is it started to get a little bit ratty and torn. And so I wrote a post about how I was going to buy some new red dresses. And suddenly all of these women came from, and not just women, men and women, came from out of the woodwork to say, I want to buy a red dress for someone. And so we set up this Facebook page, just I think it's just called The Traveling Red Dress, where if you had a red dress that you wanted to give away, you could just put a picture up there, and the first person to say, I'd like it, got it, and they pass it on to the next person. And so there are literally thousands of traveling red dresses that are just being flung all over the world.
It's just it's a tribute to you, but it's so amazing what can happen on blogs. I mean, are you finding yourself constantly thinking, wow?
I am. I am constantly amazed at the support and also at how many people have come out to say, oh my God, I'm not alone. So many of us are finding our tribe and finding that we're not the only weirdos out there.
That's Jenny Lawson. Her new memoir is Let's Pretend This Never Happened. We'll also link you up to blogs and her Twitter accounts at hereandnow.org. And Jenny, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.